And we have a special guest this week.
Welcome to the Selling on eBay radio show. We're here to save you money, to increase your sales, and to have fun. Maybe. This is fake announcer guy saying here's Philip and Sherry.
So that's Sherry Smith and Philip Jackson, your hosts for the Selling on eBay radio show. You can find out more about us at sellsellsell.online. Busy show this week with some unique content.
Yes, we have Mark Bayless back and we are going to pick his brain.
Very good. And we find out that eBay is about to eat even more of Sherry's lunch.
Like as if there was much to begin with. And USPS starts to crack down on recycled boxes.
All right, let's get cracking.
Know.
Yes, eBay news this week. Yes, more consignment competition.
Yes, eBay announced the eBay consignment now accepts luxury apparel, so not just luxury handbags.
Is that taking food off your table?
It will if it gets widespread and people use it. Enough to where when I heard they were doing this with high-end handbags, I started focusing more on commercial equipment.
Ah, very good.
So I just always stay nimble, you know, because things constantly change. So it's just that if it becomes ubiquitous and everyone knows about it and wants to use it, then it would definitely infringe on my best business.
Well, hopefully they'll broaden it out and sellers will be able to apply to be part of the program and maybe you'll meet whatever criteria they come up with and then you'll get your share of the stuff to sell.
Yeah, if so, I won't complain about it. I mean,
maybe a good thing, you never know. All right, other things in the news. Someone mentioned this the other day at a meetup and I thought, I don't know. They said that they'd seen a notice taped to the side of the wall in their post office saying you cannot use Amazon boxes to send stuff through the post. And I thought, I don't know. I mean, people that run post offices seem to have complexes where they like to impose lots of rules in their little fiefdom. And I thought,
yes,
you know, that's just another example. I'm sure that's not part of a coherent national policy. But someone online posted a proper looking post-it that looks like it had been designed by the communications department at USPS with all the rules and regulations that apply to using used boxes to send stuff through the mail. And it goes through things like you can't have partial barcodes on there, you can't have any kind of writing that their optical character recognition systems might get confused by, you have to peel off all the old labels or you have to paint them out with spray paint or something and basically make the box just be a box with their label on and all other markings such as, I think, brands of Amazon brands or bits and pieces of stuff of previous shipments are all got rid of.
So the Amazon tape that closes the box, does that have to be off?
Well, I think it depends on what the motivation is. This is just a poster. It didn't provide a great level of detail. And I thought initially when someone said this, maybe the problem is that most of the, certainly around here, the post offices do a Sunday delivery for Walmart and Amazon. They have negotiated that as part of their service arrangement. And maybe if you stick something in an Amazon box, it goes into the hopper for the Sunday delivery and they don't want to be giving you, you know, weekend delivery that you're not entitled to. So that kind of made sense that they might want to do that. But then when I saw the poster, I think it's just, and these rules are generally out there with FedEx and UPS, not necessarily terribly well enforced, but you are supposed to clean up the box and particularly things like barcodes because it goes through the scanning system and the thing says, well, hang on, this barcode doesn't make any sense to me. And it kicks it out probably into a big basket somewhere. And then some poor sod's got to manually figure out what's going on with that, put a sticker over the offending thing, and then put it back into the system. And obviously that takes time and effort and costs them money. So if they're not grumpy enough at the post office counter now, this is going to add another thing that you have to comply with to get your stuff dropped off. I think if you just throw it in the metal hopper thing, then probably you're good. But there we are.
Well, so far my mailman hasn't said anything to me, thankfully. He's nice, so I don't have to go to the counter.
It does seem to be a thing, officially. And on the shipping front, Sherry Shipping Corner, You've had some fun and games with FedEx, the one rate thing you've had some exposure to now?
Well, yeah. So the 2-day one rate is now available on eBay labels. The weird thing is that I don't offer FedEx on my listings because I don't want to go to FedEx and I don't have a FedEx driver who picks up for me. So
the UPS man has that market cornered.
Oh, he sure does. And he leaves dog treats. I mean, you can't compete with this guy. So when someone had FedEx and I thought, how did they do that? I didn't even put it as an option. I know with sneakers, it does have to go that way.
Okay.
And they weren't sneakers though, this thing. And you know what?
It wasn't authentication.
I changed it. I changed it to USPS Ground Advantage. Oh. I'll let you know if I end up with, you know, a problem from that.
Well, if you do,
I thought,
you'd be
how weird. Yeah, how weird they were able to choose FedEx.
That's weird.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, so keep an eye on that. If you've heard of anything there, you know what's going on, do let us know, because we're obviously very confused. And that, I think, is the news as we know it for this week. Sherry, who's our guest?
Our guest is Mark Bayless, and we got great feedback about him. And it wasn't just his relatives. The last time we had him on our show, he's been selling on eBay since 2003, but has been a full-time reseller since 2018. And Mark's eBay store is Dr. Flock's General Store. Mm-hmm. All one word. Do you approve?
Yeah.
yes, because Philip talked about good store names. Yes, I try and think,
are there multiple ways you could spell that? I think that was pretty clean. Although there's probably an apostrophe in there, but I don't think that would.
I was afraid to change it.
Me too. I'm afraid to change mine. And mine has all these bad things about it, like a number and a U instead of Y-O-U. But I'm afraid to change mine too.
All right. So, yes, it has our seal of approval. Let's move on.
Okay, good. Because Philip went on about a good store name. So
it makes sense. I hear you.
Yeah. And
well, I have
Mark,
to make up one for myself, actually. I'm trying to come up with a second store
store?
My own personal stuff.
Oh, that's right, for
so
all your clothes.
All my junk I want to get rid of. I mean, not junk's not a word I should be using, but so yes, I'm on the search for like a something dot something store that hasn't been taken that meets all my criteria.
Oh, like Florida's Closet or Hot Closet.
Yeah, so anyway, we'll come back to that.
Okay, he doesn't want my help. So Mark, you emailed me after our episode a couple of weeks ago about the fact that you cross promote and the success you've had. And I had given up on posting on Poshmark and Mercari and the one with a Depop, Etsy. Okay. So anyway, you gave me really good feedback and you've motivated me. So I wanted you to share that with our listeners, just your experience and what does well on the different sites.
Yeah, so, you know, like I said, the email, I wasn't really looking forward to doing any of this.
Yeah.
But I kind of felt like here and there I'd have these, like, slow weeks on eBay for whatever reason. And I'm like, what am I doing here? I need to be getting some more eyes on some of this stuff, especially since I started selling a lot more random sort of items. And you know, I'd heard about List Perfectly and Vendu I was like, well, I should just give it a try. And I started doing it and it wasn't right away and it's still not super success, but things sell sometimes way faster for whatever reason than eBay. And I'll take the sale any day that's coming quicker. Because I want the sale, and there's definitely certain things that it will get some more views, especially on like Mercari. It like seems like anything like 80s, 90s, even Y2K nostalgia, like really gets a lot of views quickly. You know, maybe that's the millennial thing. I had a sale last week that I was up for like 12 hours and had like 16 views and 6 likes, which is like a watcher on Mercari. And then I got full price and eBay had been sitting there for 12 hours and had 3 views. and zero watchers. So, I mean, not like it wouldn't have sold on eBay eventually. It just kind of hit that, you know, spot for, you know, it was like a 90s nostalgia type thing. And then there was like another sale that was just something that had been sitting on eBay, an expensive book for, you know, over a year. And then I took an offer on Mercari and got rid of it for, you know, it was like $100-something book that I paid a dollar for. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was just, that's just an example. And, but then last week eBay was going off for me and the other sites weren't really doing anything. But I'm glad I have these other backups because if something went wrong with my eBay account or something, I got kicked off for a week or something, you know, if I didn't have something working, I mean, it's like insurance for me as well as a reseller.
Yeah. And it's, you had said in your email, well, if you know, you don't need the extra sales, then I can see you not wanting to bother with it. And I need as many sales as I can get. I do need more. And I am assuming, you know, most people do. And I want to do what I need to do to get that. So the fact that things are selling, and then you said that on Etsy, you don't have to be the maker of the item as long as it's vintage, and vintage is 2005 and older. Is that right?
Yeah. On Etsy. Yeah. And I just kind of, I'm not really sure how much you have to fudge with the, if it's newer, but I was just like, let me just, I have so many mostly vintage items anyway that I'm just going to stick to vintage because they don't question anything after I put in that it's before 2005. So I just go with it as long as it's before that. And yeah, so you don't have to deal with anything in regards to, you know, you just have to go with their, is it made by someone else? And, you know, whatever those two options yes. that they make you fill out that are kind of silly.
Yeah.
And then they have a lot of optional, you know, things to fill out that you can really skip over on most of this stuff to save time.
I was just going to jump in. Are these other platforms generally, as a rule, cheaper in terms of commission than eBay? So that's that motivation to go there, or they're more expensive, but there's a faster sell rate?
You know, they're pretty similar, and they all have their things that are annoying with in regards to that. I mean, it kind of depends. Like Etsy, you have to do the 20 cents per listing, and then when it re-ups, it does the 20 cents again. But they have the lowest fees, transaction fees.
Okay.
Unless they use their marketing. And if you get, you know, a sale through their marketing, it's quite high, which, you know, I've gotten a couple of those. Mercari and Poshmark seem to be very similar so far, you know, just slightly lower than eBay fees. But that's the motivation for me, is just to get more eyes and, you know, more, you get those people that aren't on eBay for whatever reason to look at my items and possibly buy them. Because there are those people out there that just, you know, they don't like eBay, or they never got into it, or, you know, they're already an Etsy seller, and, you know, they just like to shop on Etsy for whatever reason, or I'm not really sure what makes these people use these things, because I don't really use any of them. But
I met someone the other day and he said, oh yeah, his wife buys on Poshmark all the time. And that's just where she buys from. Also on Poshmark, you have to share your items. Do you do that, or do you use a bot to do that?
I have been doing it myself. I just kind of wait till I have a bunch of new things on there, which isn't that often because it's mostly clothing stuff or toys. Mm-hmm. And I'll share a bunch at once. It doesn't seem to do that much for me. You know, I think you're also supposed to like things, even if you don't like them.
Oh, gosh, I can't stand it.
Share and all that stuff. Share, like if I put a new listing up, that is kind of fits into the Poshmark sort of, I don't know, what people are into on there. You'll get, all of a sudden, I'll get a bunch of shares and some likes. And likes are the ones you can send offers on. But I realize sometimes when I might click on that person's account and if they liked it, but they have like 2,000 listings, I know they don't really probably want to buy it because they're a seller, you know. But I might sell. I'll probably send the offer anyway, just to do it. But yeah, Poshmark's definitely a little weirder, and I'm trying to figure it out, but I'm not putting all the effort forward. I don't really want to pay for a bot or anything like that at this point.
Okay, but you are getting sales on Poshmark though, or not as much?
Some, a few, okay. Not
more
a lot.
More Mercari and Etsy then?
Yeah, I'd say that most of them have been on there since I've only been really doing. I tried to do this without like using List Perfectly, like 5 years ago, and it was just too much work to try and manage it. And then so this time, so I already had the Posh account. I already had the Etsy account. I just added the Mercari account, and that seemed like enough for me to start with. And Etsy and Mercari have been most of those sales, but a few here in Poshmark, and I'll take them. There's no like extra fees to be on Poshmark, you know, extra. There's no store fee or anything. It just, I'll just take the sale if it happens.
Okay. Yeah. And you gave me the phone number to call Mercari because they had closed my account that I couldn't find on their site. Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. So I'll do that. And then I'll report back, but it's just good to know anything to increase sales that's, you know, above board and everything I want to do. And I have my free trial on List Perfectly, so we'll see what happens. And I know that Philip wanted to ask you about virtual assistants because he's just very motivated to sell the clothes he's not wearing. And you were writing descriptions back in the day. For what? Concert t-shirts or?
It was a vintage clothing company that was on eBay. And I through a friend of a friend, found this guy. And he just had me write those AI-type listings that the AI writes for you now. Or, you know, just kind of like a funny listing about whatever vintage shirt he was selling. You know, they were like disco shirts and concert shirts and Hawaiian shirts, all like real vintage stuff. And I'd have to write like three sentences like, oh, you'll be the talk of the club in this, butterfly collar, you know. But the guy was ahead of his time, kind of. Like, I think he had me connect to his server and he had all the HTML, and I just had to like type in the paragraph, say something about, you know, the condition, and then he would post it to eBay and to his own website back then. This guy had like, you know, he had, I wanted to see where he got his inventory back then, but you know, he kind of told me, but it was, I don't know, he didn't want me to work in the warehouse, he wanted me to work from home. So I don't think I made very much money or anything, but I don't know about listing assistant these days.
There used to be that trading assistant directory that eBay used to manage, and they did away with that some years ago. I guess they felt there was no real advantage to eBay doing it versus someone else just setting something up. But I don't really know. I can't think of a direct replacement other than going on to social media or Craigslist or something and trying to find someone that does this.
I think you definitely want someone that is local just in case, you know. I don't know about handing my account over to someone, you know.
Well, I think that I haven't played with the what eBay calls MUA, the multi-user access or something or other. I presume you can delegate your account to someone to at least create drafts for you. That's what I would want them to do.
Yeah,
I wouldn't give them access to my money. But I'd like them to take the photographs, write the description, figure out the price.
And do the measurements.
Do the measurements, whatever it takes, maybe run an iron over it if that's worth the time. Mm-hmm. And package it up in a little, you know, cellophane envelope of some sort. So get to the point where it's pretty much good to go as a listing. And I assume you can do that, give someone delegated authority to do that on your account without having to reveal too much to them.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, this stuff we're talking about is relatively lightweight. It would be easier, frankly, to have them box it back up, back in the big carton, send it back to me. Then I'll do fulfillment myself because I'm doing that anyway. And to be honest, if there's a mess up, it's on my account. I'm not going to worry about somebody else, you know, whether they go, you know, the dog gets sick and they can't send stuff out one day and then there's a big argument. You know, it's just better off not dealing with that if you can help it, I think.
Yeah.
And so that was what I wanted. It was just the listing piece. That's the bottleneck that I will never get myself through. Plus, I'm a perfectionist. I will take, a good day for me is like 5 listings if I really crack through.
Oh, man. That's, you know, okay when they're.
That's fine. If I'm making a few $500, that's fine. But, you know, when you're losing $10 on a shirt, that's not a good business model. So,
no.
I just want to crank this stuff out. And I'm sure there's people
there. You don't want my model of hiring local teenagers.
Well, once I get down a little bit below the death pile level I'm currently at, I might have a bit more space and I could potentially have more space here to have someone do that. And there would be advantages to doing that. But that's not where I'm at right now.
Okay.
And
Philip, you must have a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I think I do. Just was doing some mental arithmetic at the weekend. I thought, oh my goodness, this is going to be a problem.
Just have to make sure that you know that the items that you're thinking of having, you know, listing assistants help you with are worth listing.
Well, that'd be part of the job, is to eyeball it and throw it back in the box if it's not. I mean, it's going to cost, I thought, let's say of the order of $4 a listing. If someone is paid $20 an hour, they do five listings an hour typically, that's $4 an item. That was my sort of benchmark. So yes, if it's worth nothing, it's not worth doing. On the other hand, there is a tax loss involved, even if it doesn't sell for very much, which I can offset against my other side of the business, which hopefully will next year still make some money. So, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to under my selling account, because if someone says, well, hang on, you're booking all these losses, I want that under my business ID as opposed to somebody else. Although you could do it in a consignment model and just lose more money on the consignment side of things. But it'd be easier, I think, if they uploaded it to my operation.
Yeah, and you would pay them as a general contractor or a 1099 or payroll?
I don't know.
Probably 1099 if it's that separated and they're not working at your location.
We'll figure that out. I don't know. Yeah.
Okay, but you're right. Those are write-offs and expenses.
Maybe, I don't know what the stuff's worth, but it's certainly worth something.
And yeah.
Even if I don't make money compared to what I paid for it, it's better than just going to landfill or charity.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the plan. But I need to find someone. And I'm sure there's people out there that do sell I mean, this is typically just old man's clothing, basically the Lands End, the LL Bean, the Columbia, those sort of classic sort of hard-wearing cotton-type stuff that a lot of people like to wear because it's just very durable and the sizing's very consistent. And I got too much of it.
No vintage T-shirts?
No. No Frankie Goes to Hollywood or AC/DC concert shirts. No, sadly, my sheltered life means if I had those, it wouldn't fit anyway now. But yes.
So, Mark, what kind of stuff do you have right now?
Oh, I got just a lot of everything. I mean, I'm still getting through a lot of car parts, but most of that stuff's been listed. I hadn't. Yeah, so that stuff keeps selling, but I'm really just been doing a lot of everything stuff because I haven't made any big hauls recently, so I've been going to a lot of estate sales, and I've been trying to build up that Poshmark thing with some clothes, but gone to some Goodwill bins and stuff, but it's just a bit of everything, a lot of books and magazines. I got thousands of these 1950s consumer electronics manual schematic things that I've been going through. I have thousands of them. You make like $5 a pop of them. So it's
how
one of those things.
How many can you list in an hour?
Probably like if I have I use a scanner just to do the one. You only show like the one sheet. You probably do 10, 15 an hour or more. I haven't really timed it, but, once you got a bunch of them scanned in, you're really just copying, pasting everything, just changing the title.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's working out. So
I see people selling manuals for esoteric electronic items where they've just gone to the manufacturer's website, downloaded the PDF, printed it off, put a staple through it, and they list it up as a printed manual. Mm-hmm. And I guess they must find people that put value on having someone do that rather than do the legwork themselves, which strikes me as strange, but they I guess they do it because it works for them. Otherwise they wouldn't be doing it. So
yeah, these are from the 50s and they're so you don't show more than one page because then people are gonna be able to find it or make a PDF out of it. I mean, some of them are only 4 pages, but others are like 20 pages. And they're for like people that were really going to rebuild or try and fix the item. They're not like a instruction manual, someone learning how to use it for. So they're, you know, it's a lot shows you where the tube, you know, what kind of tubes to put into it and the whole schematic diagrams. And they're pretty cool looking, but yeah, they're not, besides one that I sold for like $40, the rest are kind of like, you know, I sell them for $11 free shipping. And, you know, I got thousands of them. I just have to scan more of them.
Oh my gosh, that is great. See, you never know. That's a perfect example when people say what sells well.
But that's the kind of thing where an assistant would be great, because you could say, here's a big stack, take your time, scan the first page, whatever. And you could, it just, it's a repeat the process. It's not a lot of intellectual input, I guess. And that's chewing up your time that you could be out scouting for interesting, you know, car knickknacks or something.
But I did realize I had to list these in collectibles because you have a basic store. So once you get, when you have a basic store, you only have a certain amount of listings in the certain categories. Oh, and then you have like 10,000 in the others. And I had to make sure, since I was listing, you know, in 1 month, I had like 500 of those. And I didn't have them listed in collectibles. So I had to make sure that I changed those to collectibles, because otherwise I was going to start getting 25 cents per listing
once
it ran out.
Which is
but
like
luckily
10%.
In collectibles there is a place for it. So, yeah.
Oh, that's great. And it is collectible.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, there's a spot for radio, television, phonograph stuff in collectibles.
Well, that's very cool. So estate sales, you've been finding things.
Yeah.
And
I found I found a crazy thing last year. You guys don't have to include this or whatever, but it was like a car part, you know, because now I know something about car parts, not a lot, but now I go find them out in the wild. And I found this one piece that was something that you would make your own drag racer back in the 60s.
You buy
this thing in a magazine, they send you this thing that like spins gasoline and blows fire, and you'd attach it to your, you know, drag racing vehicle. And and I found out it was banned by the NHRA in the late 60s, and then the company went under.
And it was just something to create a fiery effect, or did it actually provide?
No, it was actually like an explosion off the back of a car to make it go fast in like a drag racing strip.
Oh, what could possibly go wrong with that?
And I guess there were some problems. And but somehow
wrongful death lawsuits and things that direction.
Yeah. So somehow I went to this garage / estate sale, and because they said they had hot rod parts, and I'm like, where are the hot rod parts? And they showed me this thing, this hunk of metal, and I'm like, they told me they think it's a turbocharger. And I looked up turbocharger on eBay. There's all kinds of different turbocharger things, and they're all like, it could be $100, $500. I'm like, okay, I'll take a flag on this. And they said, you know, how much? And they said $25, and I grabbed it. And I thought maybe I get $100 or $200 out of it. I get it home, and I find the name on it, and I can't remember the name of it right this second, but it ends up being this very rare, like, museum-type piece. And I had to, like, there was very little information on it besides, like, a flyer and a magazine, and someone had one for sale for $2,000 somewhere, some site, and someone listed it. Sold it on eBay for like $3,000 a couple of years before. And I, so I ended up I started at $4,000 and then took an offer for $2,500 at one point. So it was $25 and the $2,500. That was my single item flip of the year last year. So
it was kinda cool. That's awesome. Wait, you got that at an estate sale, or did I miss that?
They told me it was an estate sale when I got there. It was kind of like a family-run sort of estate sale, not like one of the companies. It was kind of like a garage sale.
Okay, well, that's awesome. Out in
the rural area, yeah.
And you're in Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's very cool.
Yeah, so, I wish I had one every day or, you know, once a week. That would be nice.
Yes, I finally sold my last bakery mixer that I had, a commercial one, which is great, but I want one of those per month.
Yes.
So I think that's the deal, yeah, like for us to just keep getting more of those good items. And you're doing this full time, right?
As far as I can tell, it's hard to know all the time, especially if I get, you know, stuff with the kids, stuff with the house, you know, it's hard to always know. I'm not able to just give myself 6 to 8 hours a day like I want sometimes, you know.
So, but it's your full-time income, though, that it's providing.
For me, yeah, yeah.
That's great. So
my wife works, too, but that's, that's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, well, it sounds like you're doing a great job. And I really appreciate you giving us those tips and giving me the tips and the motivation to get on the other sites and just increase sales overall.
It's, you know, definitely a learning curve, and I'm still learning on it. But when you get those sales in like a slow week on eBay or something that's been sitting on eBay for a year, and then you all of a sudden it just sells on the other site, you're like, well, okay, thank you. You know, I'm glad I did that.
Yes. Well, that's going to be my tip of the day.
Okay.
Is that you might as well cross promote on other sites, use a tool that will, cross list it for you. And that way it'll just increase your sales overall. And if it's not, then stop doing it. And I'm going to follow my own advice. What's your tip of the day?
Well, I thought I'd go with it's a buying tip, and maybe I think we all kind of buy on eBay from time to time, right? And so much these days, for whatever reason, it seems to be done via the best offer process. It seems to be something that eBay has got us all excited about. And I find that sellers tend to fall into two camps. Either they're very quick to respond to an offer that I might make, and then the other ones, they're like sit on it for the best part of the 24-hour window and see if anything else comes in before committing to, one or the other. Now, sometimes the offer and the buy it now, they're kind of close together and I'm kind of torn between the two. I think maybe I'll put an offer in and just kind of see how it goes, and I'll leave the buy it now for now, but I'll keep an eye on things. And it's sometimes helpful to know whether other people are putting in offers, because if I know that other offers are on the table, I might go back and do that buy it now just to snag it and take it off the table. So how do you find out how many offers the guy has and therefore whether or not that buy it now becomes attractive? Well, what I do is I open up that listing under another account, and we've talked before about why I recommend having at least two different accounts on eBay, one for buying, one for selling, apart from anything else. And then if you start the offer process, not make an offer, just start the process, it will say there are four offers already started up on this item or whatever. Now, there's always going to be one because that's the one that you had. But if there's more than one showing, that means that there's at least one other competing offer on the table. So that then gives you that piece of information to decide what you want to do. So you could either, for example, place a higher offer than you originally put via the second account, so you're basically bidding against yourself. No harm in doing that. You could just go and buy it now if the buy it now price is kind of attractive with that new market intelligence that you've just found out. Or you could go back to the original account. You could cancel the first offer and make another offer. But I wouldn't recommend doing cancelling too many things, because I think eBay kind of cracks down on that after a bit. You're allowed a certain percentage of retractions, and after that it's considered somewhat sharp practice and may cause you issues. So just a way of finding out kind of how busy it is and kind of beginning to reverse engineer the seller's position and whether or not you want to go back and make a better offer or take advantage of a buy it now that's kind of within the range of acceptability.
Wow, that's especially helpful when you're buying and reselling.
Yeah, or just buying anything. Because it just seems to be everyone's buying stuff through the offer process. And it's frustrating to see that, because they'll send you a note when someone else takes it away from you and their offer wins and it's sold for $5 or a small percentage more than you were prepared to pay. And if I had known there was other people going after it, I could have come up with a bit more money probably. Just gives you an idea as to kind of how busy things are and whether or not you want to reconsider.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So there you go. All right. Just moving on to our little diary spot here. Don't know whether Sherry's having a meetup anytime soon. Or if you're in
Orlando area. Thursday.
Yeah, we got one coming up 16th of April. Bit of advance notice for you. As always, taking place at Firebird's Bar and Grill. That's in Winter Park in Orlando. We'll be starting 5:30-ish. You can come a bit later if you like. Lots of eBay swag to give away. I'm thinking mugs, or even more mugs.
Yeah, well, and we're meeting again on the second Thursday in April.
All right, and if you get this in time, Sherry. And if it's...
Oh, I'm sorry, a time, 6 p.m.
Okay, and if you get this the podcast in time, end of the month.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, use your shipping supplies coupon. It's expiring.
Yes, there you go. We got there yet.
That's all right. Philip wanted.
Very good. And that's about it. Thanks very much indeed. Thank you, Mark, for being a great guest. We'll see you again soon, I hope. Philip here saying thank you for your time.
And Sherry saying thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. And thank you, listeners, for joining us as well.